This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Valinsky.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. The 20th Annual AIDS Walk will take place this coming Sunday, March 15th, with a portion of the proceeds going to local AIDS charities. Kelly McCann of the AIDS Foundation will be joining us to talk about that. Then News Wrap from This Way Out brings us up to date on all the national and international GLBT news, including the California Supreme Court's hearing of oral arguments in the lawsuit challenging that state's Proposition 8, and a lawsuit has been filed in federal court to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act. Yay! Also a bill to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that policy banning military service to openly GLBT people. That bill has been filed in the U.S. Congress. Then Paul Scott of Equality Texas will be here to discuss the success of Lobby Day at the Texas Capitol. In our second hour, the Blind Friends Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgendered People, known as BFLAG, that's BFLAG. It's an organization to provide the betterment of lives of those who are visually impaired and who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and or their friends. And Sally Huffer of the Montrose Counseling Center will be here in our second hour to talk about bringing in the green. This year marks 20 years of St. Patrick's Day celebrations at MCC. It's a long-held tradition in Houston's GLBT communities. And, of course, we have the rest of This Way Out's weekly feature presentations, and that's tonight on Queer Voices.
Well, good evening. This is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka. This weekend is one of my favorite fundraisers of the year, and I do a couple of fundraisers, but this one I think is the most rewarding, and tonight we have Kelly McCann, CEO of AIDS Foundation Houston, in to talk about this very special fundraiser. Hi, Kelly.
Good evening. Thanks for having me in.
And this, his favorite...
All right, is everyone...
And if y'all don't know, this Sunday is...
The 20th. AIDS Walk Houston.
20 years.
20 years, yeah.
What
an pretty
amazing thought.
Did you ever think you'd be here 20 years later?
You know, I don't think actually anyone that was around for that first walk, which was called From All Walks of Life, mm-hmm. I don't think anybody really expected that 20 years later we would still be here still fighting this fight. I think maybe naively we thought this was going to be just one of those flash-in-the-pan epidemics that we deal with as a crisis in our community, resolve, and then we'd move on. And unfortunately, this epidemic has continued to grow, and it's still growing.
Even with some of the medical advances, it's still a death sentence.
Well, you know, I think the good news is that if you find out that you are infected with HIV and you get yourself into care right away, then you and your doctor can decide what the best course of treatment is for you and when the best time is to begin it. And if you then follow your doctor's orders, eat right, take care of yourself, then you can live a long, healthy life. But at the same time, Jennifer, I think we do have to acknowledge that people still die from this illness.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, somebody, a new friend of mine, a guy that I had become friends with just within the past year, someone that had just been elected to the Rhine-White Planning Council, and he was very, very active in helping people with HIV secure their services and also fighting for what's right and fighting to make sure that organizations use their monies properly. And his name was Glenn Corot, and Glenn just passed away in December.
Yeah,
and it was totally unexpected.
Yeah, he was staff at the Center for AIDS.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and we were totally shocked. I mean,
yeah, it was, and it's a huge loss to our community, too. Glenn was a great guy, and he was just beginning to grow as an activist. He was really going to do something.
Yeah, he was getting very active, and just one day we got an email, you know.
And he had been doing pretty well, and
he was
just
very healthy.
All of a sudden developed, I believe, pneumonia,
mm-hmm.
and very quickly
it was very quick.
Succumbed. Mm-hmm. And so I want everyone to remember that and remember why this walk is so important. It's because this disease is still taking lives of people we love, vital members of our community,
mm-hmm.
and to add to that, three more people each day become infected. So we have the double duty, if you will, of caring for those who are living with the disease and trying to help them live longer and healthier lives, while at the same time we're trying to prevent new infections. So we all have our work cut out for us.
Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
What organizations does the AIDS Walk support?
You know, each year, and you know, we at AIDS Foundation Houston are the ones that present the walk every year, and this year we're very grateful again to Chevron for sponsoring our walk. And what we do is we allow other AIDS service organizations, if they choose, to be a partner agency, and then they are allowed to raise money for their organization through our walk. And we have 14 different benefiting organizations this year from, like as Brian mentioned, the Center for AIDS. Center for AIDS and Baring are always neck and neck for our top partner teams.
They're going down.
I'd say that's an official challenge.
You know who you are out there, Baring. You challenge the number one team now.
And then, you know, and I have to say, yes, the Center for AIDS and Baring, they are always top fundraisers. They are wonderful organizations, and they benefit from this walk. But what I'm even more proud of are the smaller organizations who really utilize this walk to raise huge percentages of their overall annual budgets. Mm-hmm. And Lazarus House is an example of that. Danielle Sampi and her people over there at Lazarus House. And there's just a list, and you can see that either on our website or in this month's Outsmart, all the different organizations
that
benefit.
And the website is, let's give it to them
early. AIDSWalkHouston.org. That's the specific website for the AIDS Walk. And, you know, one other thing just to mention is that, you know, Brian, I appreciate you saying this is your favorite event because, frankly, it's one of mine, too.
Well, it's so rewarding, I think, you know.
And it's really grassroots.
I mean,
this is one of the few remaining true grassroots events in the community. It is all different people from all walks of life, not to use that old phrase, but all different folks coming together to put this on and to make a difference. And it is one of the best events for that reason, in my opinion, in the city.
Well, it's amazing that you have 15,000 people last year in the walk. I mean,
well, and it's like a river of people with all the different colored shirts. Every team
has
a different. Let's talk about the AIDS Walk for people that may not know what it is exactly.
Well, you know, it is this coming Sunday, March 15th. And it is at the beautiful Sam Houston Park in downtown Houston. Mm-hmm. And registration begins at 8 a.m. And our opening ceremonies are going to start in the 9 o'clock hour. And then at 10 o'clock is the official kickoff of the walk. And we actually walk. We have Allen Parkway closed down from the park all the way down to Passwa. Is it Shepherd? Do we go all the way down to Shepherd?
I had heard that there was going to be a course change this
year. You know, we did originally, we talked about doing a course change just to do something new and different after 20 years if people were getting bored. But, you know, after getting out there and really looking at it, it didn't make a lot of sense for us. Susan G. Komen had changed their course, and we were going to examine theirs. But it just didn't work as well for us. We like to have a lot of what we call hoopla stations along the route. And the route change wasn't going to allow for hoopla. And so far be it for me to say no hoopla. So we're going to use the same existing walk up and back down Allen Parkway.
I think it goes to Dunleavy.
Dunleavy, that's it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so the hoopla stations are, you know, people, you might have a kazoo band or, you know, the Pride band is going to have an ensemble out there performing for us, or people in other ways just generally making a spectacle of themselves and cheering on all the walkers.
There's like radio stations are out there handing out things. Continental Airlines hands out little beads and stuff.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's very festive. It's fun. And that's the atmosphere that the biggest thing I want to convey is that this is a time not only to commemorate those that we have lost and to commemorate 20 years of working to fight this illness, but it's also a celebration for those of us who still have friends and loved ones who are alive, who are living and breathing and laughing and enjoying life. And that is the other part. And I want people to remember this is a celebration as well as a chance to commemorate the past.
To remember that it's a celebration of life as well as the disease itself and raising money for, you know, the improvements.
There's no greater representation, I think, of that struggle or of that than the AIDS Walk, just seeing all those people walking together.
And it is a beautiful, colorful rainbow, isn't it? Yes. To just, if you stand on that bridge at Waugh, you just get the best vantage.
Well, I'm usually walking in it, so I don't get to see that.
You don't get to. Yeah, you just have to look at Dalton's pictures.
I look at Dalton's pictures.
But also the people, you know, and anyone out there who doesn't want to do the walk itself can come and watch and be supportive of the thousands of people walking, and that's what's important.
Or even better, maybe donate to a specific team or walker or to the walk itself.
But see, I don't know how to do that. How would I do that?
I thank you for asking that.
That's
if anyone
question.
Would like information, or certainly if you would like to donate to AIDS Walk Houston, please go to www.AIDSWalkHouston.org, and then you will be able to click on either, as Brian mentioned, if you want to support a specific person or a specific team. We have buttons you can click on for that. You can make credit card donations right online.
It's so easy.
It is very easy, honestly, and I am not a techie person, but it is a very easy program to work. But if you are not comfortable doing things online, then certainly you can write a check or bring a cash donation to 3202 Wesleyan, and that's 77027.
Now, maybe I don't have a whole lot of money, and any amount is appreciated, right?
You know, I thank you so much for saying that, because I want to stress that in hard times, people think, oh, I don't have a lot to give, so I'm just not going to give at all. And I want everyone listening to realize what we can do with what they might think of as a small donation.
Oh, yeah.
Because of our ability to leverage, and with matching programs and different things like that, I can take what you might view as a small gift and really double its impact. And here's an example. For as little as $7.50, and I am not exaggerating, $7.50. That's like, what, a six-pack of Corona? That for $7.50, I can feed a person for a week. I can provide a full week's worth of nutritious, non-perishable food items for $7.50. So please, if you only have a few dollars to give, even if it's just the change from your sofa cushions, believe me, it makes a world of difference.
Well, that's amazing, and I'm glad you said that, because, you know, I think of it, well, I only have $10. That's just really not much to give. But yet, because of the organization, the way it operates, and matching funds and all, it can mean so much more to so many more people.
And we're talking about providing things that people need every single day. And yes, these are we're talking about individuals who are living with HIV and AIDS, but we are talking about 80% of our clients living on $10,000 a year or less. So the fact that they have HIV is just one more issue that they have to contend with. We're talking about trying to help people meet their needs for food and shelter. And you bet $10 can help me provide a home, at least overnight, off the streets for a mother and her children. Or, as I said, buy food or send a child to camp. So yes, anything that you can give, and especially in this year, because with the economic downturn, more people are going to be losing their jobs, losing their insurance, and then that's when we see an increase in the demand for our services. People need to get stone soup so that they can pay their rent that month, or they come to us for some rental assistance so they can buy their meds that month.
Right.
I remember 2003. That was what I made, $8,500 that year. It isn't much to live on.
It is difficult.
How is the economic downturn affecting the walk this year?
Well, you know, we went into this year pretty high, riding high on last year's million dollar walk.
Yeah,
first time it had ever happened in the entire state of Texas.
Really?
And yes, we're very proud of that.
Good job. Yeah.
But then, you know, the bottom kind of fell out after the walk last year in the summer and the fall. And so we went into the walk this year trying to be realistic, not expecting to make a million, and budgeted for less. Mm-hmm. And what I'm anticipating at this point, my goal for us was to actually achieve $800,000.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting here today, what are we, 6 days out from the walk?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we're going to make that $800,000, frankly, y'all.
Well, let's create the possibility out there that we're going to do $1 million again.
We're at 55% and right now.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is done in the last few days.
Well, now that is true. The bulk of the fundraising takes place in the last 2 weeks. And then we do get some monies in on the day of the walk.
Mm-hmm.
But still trying to be realistic, looking at the trends and looking not only at the overall numbers, but looking at like some of our are great teams like CFA and Bering. Y'all are tracking behind where you were last year, too. We are all in that same boat.
Yes.
I think we're probably going to see about a 30% reduction this year compared to last year. And that is not just for AIDS Walk. That is for any of us in the nonprofit world. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm most concerned about AIDS service organizations. Mm-hmm. But our private foundations, whom we rely on for grant money, they issue grants based on their investments. Well, we know what investments have been doing. They've been tanking.
Mm-hmm.
And so foundations are going to have less money to give. Special events and fundraisers are going to be less.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a very tough year for nonprofits. And because I care about those living with HIV and AIDS, I'm especially concerned because I think it's really going to hit our clients because so many of them live in poverty already, mm-hmm. and they can't afford to make changes in their lifestyles like maybe we would.
Yeah, we have to stop and think about that. A third less, which equates, because we were using the multiplier effect of just a $10 donation, that means if it's a third less, $300,000 less, that means over $500,000 less services are going to be available to those people who need it the most.
Exactly right, and that
So if you're out there, you know, think about it. Think about, you know, if you're going to donate to something, donate to the AIDS Walk. You know it's going to a good place.
Right. And, you know, I can't speak for all the different organizations, but I can tell you that, for example, at AIDS Foundation Houston, we run a very lean ship.
You do.
We don't have a lot of opulent offices.
I love your office. It's like this rundown. I'm like, this is the best office in Houston. I mean, that makes me feel good, giving money to AFH.
Well, you know, thank you.
I don't want to say it's rundown. It's just not a glamorous location.
Far from glamorous, yes. It is an old building, and it's home. But yeah, it's much more important for us to take monies and deliver them to client services.
Absolutely.
And just to let you know, if you donate to AIDS Foundation Houston, 82 cents of every dollar goes directly to clients. We have a very low administrative cost rate of 18%.
And in general, the partner agencies that you mentioned, is it 13 or 14?
14, yes.
14. 75% of what they raise stay within the agency, but 25% go to AFH. So that's that kind of encourages the organizations of which, you know, I'm helping to raise money for. That encourages us to raise money as much as we can so we can keep, you know, 75%.
Exactly. And you know, it's the other part of that is that with the Convio fundraising system online, it's very easy.
Very easy.
And that 25% actually... it doesn't quite cover our expenses. Our expenses wind up being 26% in terms of, you know, printing and stage and sound and all the things. It is quite an operation to put on an AIDS Walk. And people might not think about it, but, you know, my staff and I, we're getting to the park at about 4 o'clock that morning after having been in the park all day the day before. Because it's like building a small city. You have to make sure that there's sanitation and lighting and sound and food. And so it is quite an operation, and we love having our partner agencies, and the fact that, yes, just 25% of what they raise comes to us, and then, as you said, 75% goes to the agency.
It's one of our largest fundraisers at the Center for AIDS, and we're really, you know, pumped, and we're out there trying to raise money, and it's difficult. And I think a lot of agencies, a lot of events are going to feel it this year. But, I mean, giving what you can, every little bit counts.
And, you know, Brian, thank you for mentioning about the partner agencies, too, because you are such a great cheerleader for Center for AIDS and the work that y'all do, and then the way that being a partner agency can benefit you.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I'm shocked that we don't have more applications. It's not like we say, oh, we only can take 14. It's just amazing to me the organizations out there who do some sort of AIDS work. You don't have to solely be an AIDS service organization. Spay and Neuter, you know, Spay Neuter is one of our partners because they have one particular program that they raise money for through this walk. And it just seems like such a great deal for the partner agencies. If you're out there and listening for next year, please call me. We would love to have 20 partners if possible.
And if you're not going to be a partner this year, you can get out and support the walk by coming out and cheering everybody on or writing a check or just walking through the crowd and taking up a collection and turning it in.
Or you can go on and find a team that you like. There's so many different teams that might have interest in. Or you could go to the Center for AIDS team. Join us. We'd love to have you. We want to have as many walkers and smiley faces as we can.
And, you know, it's a great place, as you said, just to have fun. Come out for a Sunday morning. We're hoping for good weather. I understand we're going to have a cool front where I don't ever want to say no rain given the drought, but I'm hoping the rain will hold off until about noon.
That'd be great.
but come on out and just enjoy the crowd and the show because, you know, Gay Men's Chorus is going to be performing.
Absolutely. And then...
Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee is our grand marshal. She'll be speaking. And then Ezra Charles is providing entertainment after the walk. Because, you know, afterwards we kind of have a dance party.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun. So, yes, please, I encourage everyone to come out and join us. If you can't walk, just hang out and have a good time. If you can't donate, then at least come and show support for those living with HIV and AIDS.
That's the important part. Just your presence there is a sign that you support the good works of all the agencies and the AIDS Walk. You're supporting that. But the agencies y'all support.
Exactly, and the clients we serve, and that's the best message we can deliver.
Do you need any volunteers? You were talking about all the work that's necessary.
Oh, yes.
If someone, you know, doesn't have money, but they have a little time on their hands, can they help out?
You know, time equals money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, it does. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, when it comes time for us to write grants and I show how many volunteers I've had, and that I get to equate that at $11 an hour for each hour, you know, in terms of showing the impact.
Right.
So you bet. Volunteers and their time equates to money. If you're interested in volunteering, I would ask you to call us and call us soon.
What's that number?
713-623-6796 and ask for volunteers. You'll be speaking with Mark Cohen.
All right.
I know Mark.
Yeah, Mark's a good guy. He's been helping out with AIDS Walk for forever. He's also our camp director. But yes, please call Mark and tell him you want to come out and help. We have a variety of shifts. As I said, you could maybe help us out on Saturday with setup, come out on the day of. You could help with the packing it up after the party's over. That's always the hard
cleanup,
one.
Right?
Yeah, that's always
hard
the
to get
hard
volunteers
one.
For that one, isn't there?
And of course, we have a variety of other tasks even after the walk because for a long time there's data entry to be done and different kinds of clerical tasks,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make sure that all of our partners get all their money credited
right,
to them
right.
and things like that.
And now you're collecting money a month after the walk too, is that?
Money continues to come in and typically we don't put a final on our AIDS Walk totals until honestly after the summer.
Right.
You know, because monies continue to come in through matching gifts
mm-hmm.
and different types of donations through August and even into September. So we won't know our final, but, I mean, let's be honest. Prior to the walk and on the day of, we'll know what our, you know,
our
the
glory.
Bulk of it is. Yeah,
I'm really exactly. pushing our team to kind of to kick it in for the last couple of days here.
That's right. That's right.
Because there's bragging rights out there, and I know Baring and I, we're gunning for each other. It's competitive, but, you know, it's a fun competitive.
And it's a win-win, you
and,
know.
And it really motivates people to kind of get out there and raise money. And I call it checking the trees, you know.
That's right.
Sending out emails and asking your friends. And, you know, it's such a great cause. For me, it's a no-brainer to ask people for money and just to get out there and raise the money.
Well, and you know, it's not a gay disease. We know that HIV and AIDS is not a gay disease. But, you know, as a very proud member of this community, I have to remind everyone that we still have a huge number of clients coming to us every year who are men who have sex with men
mm-hmm.
or gay men. Let's just call it what it is instead of using the proper terms
right.
from epidemiology.
Right.
But it is, you know, over 50% of the new infections every year are happening in gay men. So this is impacting our community. And I do want to see, you know, gay men, lesbians, bisexual, transgendered persons, please realize this is our fight. And,
mm-hmm.
and I encourage you to please help all of us by donating what you can.
Well, then they're a large percentage of even heterosexuals that are getting the disease through various sources that still are impacted by the services rendered by all of these organizations.
Oh, most definitely. Now, I would say probably about 50%, I would say, of our clientele are members of the gay and lesbian community. But that means that 50% are straight.
Right.
And especially nowadays, what we're seeing are these disturbing increases in women, heterosexual women of color primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And we have one-third of our client population is female. And, you know, when we first started in 1982, it was nothing but gay white men.
Right.
And now about 75% of our clients are of color, a third of them are women. And of course, we also serve children. So there is
which is really the tragic part of it.
You know, the one bit of good news that I can provide,
okay.
and you know, it's nice to have a little bit of good news, is that perinatal transmission—that's mother to child mm-hmm. transmission—it is virtually nil anymore. It's been, I want to say, a year or two ago now, but Dr. Mark Klein over at Baylor, mm-hmm. who does pediatric AIDS, he said they had just had like their first. Baby born with AIDS in 4 years. So, happily, we've figured out if we can identify mom as being POS and get her in for some good prenatal care, and that would include the use of AZT after the first trimester, then the chance that she is going to give birth to a positive baby drops down to the 2% range.
Oh, that's
and that is
wonderful.
The best news that we have.
Yes.
But, of course, the basic tenet there is that you have to know that you're infected. And so that goes back to testing.
Absolutely.
Yes. So get tested, too, while we're at it.
Well, the thing is that, especially in a heterosexual female, she doesn't realize what the partner has been doing, which is the sad...
It's tragic.
There's a lack of communication going on somewhere. But if she even thinks about it, that maybe there's a possibility, and she's pregnant, to go in and get tested, because you gotta go in for prenatal care anyway. They might as well do the test.
And you mentioned something that I think women everywhere need to do, and that's listen to your gut. And mm-hmm. if your gut is telling you that your partner might be unfaithful or that something is not right, then trust your gut. But I think a lot of times people, we like to say, oh, I'm just being silly, I'm being suspicious. But I would like to share one quick thing with you. You know, years ago, I started my career in HIV as an HIV educator working at the Montrose Counseling Center. And I used to do HIV education at a variety of drug and alcohol treatment facilities. Well, I visited one here in the Montrose on Lower Alabama, and did my little, HIV 101 show. And afterwards, a man came up, and he was a gynecologist, and he had relapsed and was going back through treatment. And he told me a story about a 60-year-old woman that was his patient, and she came in with some strange symptoms, and he ran various tests, couldn't figure out what was going on. He finally, as just a last-ditch effort, ran an HIV test on this woman, and sadly, it came back positive. And she had been married to the same man for 40 years, had had no other sexual partners, had never used needles yet. Her husband had been unfaithful, had become infected, and had unknowingly brought it home and infected her. And that, sad, but that is not a rare story. It's not common, but it's not rare.
Not
and
rare.
So we really do have to be mindful that when you give someone now your heart, you're not just trusting them with your love. You're trusting them with your life.
Right. I remember during those late 70s when... patient one showed up in America, that we were all six. I was a 60s child, so we were very sexually active prior to AIDS. And one of the things we remembered, anytime you have sex, you're having sex with that whoever that person has had sex with in the last 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
And it's even
and
more so now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you go, who have you had sex with in the last 5 years?
Well, you take a look at since
I might not be able to remember 5 months ago.
Yeah, recently,
that's not been a problem.
Well, if you watched last night, the final episode of The L Word, all us lesbians, we've been very bummed out today since our L Word is gone. But there was something on The L Word called The Chart. And it was a way of showing the interconnectedness of all these women, because it was connecting you with everybody else that you had ever had sex with and everybody else that they had had sex with. And, every time I look at the chart, it makes me think about HIV and STDs, and we all need to be very careful.
Well, there's always that talk about 6 degrees,
mm-hmm.
where everyone's connected, and we think of it as a social thing, but when you really talk about sexual partners, it's a whole lot closer than you think it is. 6 degrees is not big enough when you're talking about that. But we have to remember those things.
Exactly.
And it's important that we talk and think about that.
And the sad thing is that you could just be with one person, but it only takes one time. You don't necessarily get infected just because you're exposed, but you sure could.
Absolutely.
The very first time you're with someone, you could become infected.
Zero or 100.
Yeah.
So give us the information again.
Okay. Sunday, March 15th. That's this Sunday.
It's this Sunday,
beautiful
guys.
Beautiful Sam Gals. Houston Park, downtown Houston. Registration starts at 8, and the walk kicks off at 10 a.m., presented by Chevron. And come out and see Sheila Jackson Lee as our Grand Marshal.
And contact information.
The walk website is AIDSWalkHouston.org. You can register and donate through that site. And if you're interested in volunteering, please give us a call at 713-623-6796.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Kelly.
Yes. Need your money and your volunteers, your hours.
And just your bright and smiling faces out there on Sunday morning.
That sounds good. Thank you, Kelly McCann.
Thanks very much.
I'm Donna Ann Ward.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 7th, 2009. Jamaica's Prime Minister Bruce Golding said this week during parliamentary debate on a new sexual offenses bill that his country will not decriminalize consensual adult homosexual acts and that he has a duty to protect the country. We are not going to yield to the pressure, he told the lawmakers, whether that pressure comes from individual organizations, individuals, whether that pressure comes from foreign governments or groups of countries, to liberalize the laws as it relates to buggery. But gay journalist Rex Walkner reports that new regulations issued by Jamaica's Broadcasting Commission now prohibit the airing of songs and videos that depict sex acts or glorify arson, rape, shooting or murder, which would presumably ban homophobic dance hall music that lyrically advocates violence against gays and lesbians. LGBT activists have campaigned for years against what they call the murder music of Jamaican artists such as Sizzla, Bounty Killer, Elephant Man, Vibes Cartel, Beanie Man, Buju Banton, T.O.K., and Capleton. Rampant anti-queer hatred is evident in the wider culture of the Caribbean island nation, however, with almost routine reports of mob attacks against gay men. According to JFLAG, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, more than 30 gay men have been murdered there in the past decade. International human rights organizations have described Jamaica as one of the most homophobic countries in the world.
Elsewhere, however, British Prime Minister Gordon Brown and his wife Sarah held a reception at 10 Downing Street this week to celebrate the work of LGBT equality activists. It was the first time any prime minister has held a formal reception for LGBT people at the official residence. Politicians, civil servants, activists, entertainers, teachers, and clergy were among those invited to the event. The PM paid tribute to the enormous courage of community activists, saying that he was really proud of the achievements that had been made over the years in breaking down barriers based on homophobia and discrimination. He told the cheering crowd that, "We will keep taking legislative measures to protect you." Taking on California's Proposition 8, he said that, "You cannot legislate love." He called the voter-approved revocation of marriage equality unacceptable.
And California's Supreme Court heard more than 3 hours of oral arguments on March 5th in combined lawsuits challenging the constitutionality of that November ballot initiative. The justices, by a 4-3 margin last May, ruled that the state constitution guaranteed the right of same-gender couples to marry. According to most reports about the much-anticipated hearing this week, however, the justices may be reluctant to overturn the voter-approved Proposition 8, which reversed their ruling by a 52-48 margin in November. But there was general consensus that the High Court would not annul the almost 19,000 same-gender marriages that took place during the few months that they were legal last year. Proposition 8 defenders had also asked the court to void those marriages. The other basic question the judges considered was whether the ballot initiative was an amendment to the Constitution, which requires a simple majority vote of the people, or a revision to that document, which would require approval by 2/3 of the legislature and then a popular vote. Anti-Prop 8 lawyers argued that the ballot measure changed the fundamental equal protection provisions of the California Constitution and was therefore a revision, requiring the more arduous process. Shannon Minter of the National Center for Lesbian Rights was the lead lawyer for the group seeking to overturn the marriage ban. A simple majority cannot be permitted to take away rights from a historical, disadvantaged minority, he argued, without substantially altering the very operation and purpose of equal protection, and the court's ability to fulfill its core constitutional function of enforcing equal protection.
The justices appeared hesitant, however, to overturn a popular vote. They repeatedly interrupted presentations by anti-Prop 8 attorneys with sharp challenges to their legal arguments, while the lead attorney for Proposition 8 defenders, Kenneth Starr, yes, the same special prosecutor who went after the Clintons in the 1990s, was given freer rein. Chief Justice Ronald George, who wrote the majority opinion in last year's decision that granted marriage rights to gay and lesbian couples, noted that the California Constitution has been amended hundreds of times since its inception in 1849, while the U.S. Constitution has been amended only 27 times. Justice Joyce Kennard was reportedly the critical fourth vote in the May 2008 4-3 marriage equality ruling. She said the issue presented in that case addressed the court's authority to interpret a statutory provision in light of the state constitution, and that the Proposition 8 case was completely different. We have a pretty well-established body of law in California pertaining to what is and what is not a revision, she said. Those decisions do not give strong support to your position. The right of the people to alter or change the provision of the state constitution has been a basic right, Kennard added. But you would have us choose between those rights, the inalienable right to marry, and the right of people to change the Constitution as they see fit.
Lead Prop 8 defender Kenneth Starr argued that the measure was valid because the people do have the raw power to define rights. The people are sovereign, and they can do very unwise things, and things that tug at the equality principle. When Chief Justice George asked whether an amendment taking away the right to free speech would be valid under his reasoning, for example, Starr said it would, as long as it is in fact clear to the people what they're voting on. The California Supreme Court has 90 days to issue its ruling.
U.S. President Barack Obama's campaign promises included the repeal of the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, which forbids recognition by federal agencies of legally married same-gender couples, and repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which allows military service by gays and lesbians, but only if they remain in the closet. He's necessarily focused his energies since taking office less than 2 months ago on the global economic crisis and health care reform. But efforts to repeal those two federal laws were initiated this week. The first serious challenge to DOMA, enacted in 1996 during the Clinton administration, was filed in federal court by the Boston-based Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, or GLAAD, which led the legal battle for marriage equality in Massachusetts. The group represents 8 couples and 3 surviving spouses who were legally married in the state, but have been denied federal benefits, such as Social Security spousal payments, and the right to file joint federal tax returns. Same-gender partners who wed in Massachusetts can file state tax returns as married couples, but DOMA requires them to file federal returns as individuals and subjects them to much higher tax rates. Some equality activists have warned that a legal challenge to DOMA would be perilous at this moment in history, and that its likely journey up the judicial ladder would ultimately reach a less than welcoming U.S. Supreme Court. GLAAD, which may be counting on a more hospitable federal judiciary as President Obama appoints new judges, is also calling for a parallel political effort to overturn DOMA in Congress.
And a bill to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, implemented in 1993, also during the Clinton administration, was filed this week in the U.S. House of Representatives. Lead sponsor Eleanor Tauscher, a California Democrat, said the Military Enhancement Readiness Act would replace the ban on military service by open gays and lesbians with new provisions prohibiting discrimination in the armed forces based on sexual orientation. A similar version of the bill had 149 bipartisan co-sponsors in the House last year, although then-President George W. Bush was expected to veto the measure if it had reached his desk. Dr. Nathaniel Frank, a senior research fellow at the Palm Center at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and the author of Unfriendly Fire, How the Gay Ban Undermines the Military and Weakens America, told openly lesbian Rachel Maddow on her MSNBC cable show this week that the so-called unit cohesion argument its proponents advanced to defend Don't Ask, Don't Tell was based on nothing. He said military officials he spoke with told him that it was rooted in their own prejudices and fears. They even said they didn't know what sexual orientation meant. We now have the research, he said, showing that openly gay service doesn't have any negative impact on the military. And in fact, the policy itself is what's causing us to lose soldiers and to force service members to lie to one another. And that's bad for unit cohesion.
And finally, in a strange bit of irony, organizers of a planned mid-February anti-homophobia demonstration in the central square of Gomel, Belarus, have filed suit over the city's ban of the event. Organizers had agreed to be responsible for public order and safety, to ensure on-site access to medical services, and to clean the area afterward. Their complaint says the city's action violated organizers' right to freedom of assembly, guaranteed by the Eastern European nation's constitution. It's reportedly the first time that LGBT activists in Belarus have sued for their constitutional rights in the country's courts.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 7th, 2009, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Donna Ann Ward.
This is Queer Voices.
And we're on the phone tonight with Paul Scott, director of Equality Texas. And we, as y'all may have heard last week when I came back from Lobby Day, Jack and I talked about that. Well, now we have the man himself through the his tireless efforts and the efforts of his staff and volunteers. It was a very successful one. Paul, how are you tonight?
I'm doing all right, Jennifer. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm kind of on the road right now, so I just want to make sure you can hear me.
You sound like you're in a car.
I am indeed, so I'm trying to pull over in a few minutes, so good old Austin 35 traffic.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. That's what's important. Well, tell us about the Lobby Day. Now, I was there. I left. What's happened since then?
Well, I think as you and Jack probably discussed last week on the radio show, we had a great turnout with over 400 people from around the state, all parts of the state that were part of this great day to advocate for several pieces of legislation that are before the Texas legislature right now. Primarily, we're working in the House of Representatives. And since then, what we saw really was some great outcomes from this in the sense of those people that participated in Lobby Day were able to secure their own representatives to sign on as co-sponsors or co-authors of legislation. In particular, you know, Houston Representative, you know, Dr. Alma Allen was one of those persons who was, you know, very fervent supporters and signed me up. I intend to be a signatory on all of these bills, and she did immediately that day. We also achieved several other co-sponsors and authors on several pieces of legislation. One bill that we have that's being filed by Representative Elliot Neistat here in Austin was to provide equal benefits under the UT and A&M system for other qualified individuals. And this would allow for the university systems under those two systems to provide health insurance benefits to different types of people. Whether it's domestic partners, same-sex domestic partners, or siblings, or people that don't qualify as a dependent necessarily, or opposite-sex domestic partners, it would allow for UT and A&M to make those rules. And one of those visits was with Representative Anchia out of Dallas, who agreed to sign on to that bill as well. So those are some of the initial outcomes on that very day, actually. We also saw that we got a hearing on the hate crime study bill, HB 616, and we got a committee hearing the first day that the committee met, the Criminal Jurisprudence Committee met on Wednesday, the Wednesday after Lobby Day on Monday. So we really felt very positive about the outcomes from the day itself, and we continue to see people wanting to sign on to our legislation.
That's wonderful. How has, when we're doing something like this and your organization, I know how important it is to get donations in. Has it impacted your ability to raise money?
We're still working on that. I think we definitely have such a tremendous amount of support from people across the state. And we had a great contingent from Houston there, by the way. We're very proud of our Houston membership and the Houston advocates that were there. But we do need support, particularly during this period of time where we have a full-time political director up at the Capitol, and then I'm traveling around the state at times, and our field person is as well, to get people involved and engaged, not only to be advocates during session, but also to kind of lay the groundwork so that we continue this work as we move forward, because this is what I tell people, it's kind of a long-term chess game, really, where the pieces we put into play today really create kind of the outcome tomorrow. And we really see some benefits from that right now. And that's where people support, whether it's, you know, $5 or, you know, $10 a month, whatever it may be, people can really give us some generous support. It's very helpful to us because we have thousands upon thousands of people out there that we're working for in the state of Texas.
How would they contact you to do that?
Oh, the best way is, and one thing I really want to encourage everybody to do is we just launched our new website, and we're still, you know, as most people know, it takes a while to get everything loaded into it. But our new website is much more interactive, and we can get more information from people. So you can go to equalitytexas.org, and not only can you obviously contribute to the work we do, but you can also learn about what type of work we do and how we do it. And also we have this great new feature on there where you can share your stories about what being proud of being gay or lesbian or transgender or bisexual means to you, as well as kind of what are some of the issues that you face in your own community. And we already have a couple of stories uploaded, and I got a new one today, and we're really going to encourage people to tell their stories and give us their photos so that we can really represent on our website who is in Texas and how they're affected both negatively and positively by policies in their local communities and statewide.
Well, that also is very effective to be used in some of these hearings if you have a number of stories quantitatively that you can bring to a given committee saying that these are representative of the effects of inaction or their action.
Exactly, and that's one reason. I mean, some people can go in there and you can tell your story and let us be able to use it in a hearing, or we can contact you to come and testify. We don't necessarily have to use it on the website. But for us to collect those stories, as we did in the hearing on Wednesday, we talked about the hate crime that was done in Galveston and the fact that that was charged as a hate crime that happened about, you know, a little over a week ago. And we also talked about a hate crime in Dallas that was just decided on that day. It wasn't charged as a hate crime. It was charged as an aggravated assault. But those stories really make sure that we have a good picture and a good representation of the actual issue, and really help the representatives understand the impact of what's happening specific to that issue.
Paul, this is Brian Levinka. I really enjoyed the Mary Martini mixer that Equality Texas did. I thought it was a great turnout that you had here in Houston a couple of weeks ago. I wanted to ask you, what are some of the challenges we face on a legislative or a state capital type arena as a community? What are the challenges that we're facing going forward?
Yeah, and we talked about that, Brian, during our lobby day, actually. We see that the major challenges is going to be getting people involved and to make sure that we can connect members, our members, with their elected officials, and to be advocates. For example, making sure people can really get connected to our website, sign up for our e-newsletters, and sign up for our e-alerts, when something comes up, we need everybody to respond so that when we go into an office, when I or our political director, Randall Carroll, goes into office, that legislator doesn't say, well, I don't ever hear anybody who's from my district who cares about these issues, whether it's straight, gay, or transgender, or whatever it may be. And I want to disprove that, and I think that's what this lobby day went a long way to do. This Friday is our bill filing deadline for the session. So far, there have been no anti-gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender bills filed yet. So we're going to be watching for that. So once the bill filing deadline passed, that's one hurdle. Then, of course, they can do something through amendments on the floor of the House, the floor of the Senate, as we move forward. So we will continue to look for those challenges where they'll look to restrict our rights and restrict our ability to be equal in Texas. But we really feel like we actually are having more positive interactions this session for the first time in a long time.
Now, I understand that the House of Representatives is a bit more civil than it's been in many years, but what about the Senate?
Well, I think one thing that we're trying to do in the Senate, and one of our strategies, is really to identify just a core group of people that we can strengthen our relationships with and start our developing relationships with. Because that's a great point, Jennifer. As we continue to build relationships and momentum in the House of Representatives, we need to be prepared to make sure that we are able to connect with our senators as well. Now, the atmosphere of the Senate is started off in a different way than we expected. It kind of went the course of the House in the last session, and where we see some controversial issues that we'll hear tomorrow, which is a hearing on the voter suppression bill, which comes up for a hearing tomorrow in the Senate. And so that's going to be, there's going to be a long day, in the Senate hearing that bill. And so we see that as kind of a key issue that's affecting all Texans. And also, as we see with the U.S. Senate, we see with the Texas Senate as well, is that, if 11 senators decide that something doesn't want to come up, or now, or 12 senators, however it may be, they can block something from coming if there's not votes there. So we really need to lay the groundwork to make sure that we can line up our votes in the Senate if something were to go forward.
Now, what are some of the things that listeners or people that want to get involved, what kind of volunteer opportunities are there? How can people get out there and get something accomplished or get more involved in the political process?
Well, I think the first thing is become educated. The second thing is to sign up to join as a member. And our membership is, you can sign up to get our e-newsletter and sign up to get our e-alerts, and you can be a member, you can get that information. And what's great about that is, for example, we're going to be working on a letter to the editor campaign. So if people can submit a letter to their local newspapers so that they can show whether it's, in, small communities throughout the state or small areas around Houston, people can really advocate for, say, passage of, say, the hate crime study bill, or for the anti-bullying and harassment bill that Mark Strama has filed. And by signing up on our website, we'll give you that information for you to be able to submit that to your local newspaper, as well as to call your legislator, either your senator or your representative when time comes, to let them know that you believe that this is what's right and what we all need for equality in Texas. And I think that's where the power we saw on Monday with the physical presence of our community. When I speak of our community, I mean those straight across the board. That ability to communicate and pick up the phone or send an email or write a letter in particular are very effective tools in engaging people and making changes at the Texas Capitol.
The numbers that we had were astonishing compared. It's gotten bigger and more people each time. Was it noticed by some of the legislators, especially those that might not lean our way in fairness and thinking fairly?
I think it was noticed. I mean, I think in some ways, obviously when we have a team of people go in for the third time in a row to a legislator's office, they fully are aware of kind of what's going on and who we represent. I think some of the people within the community, when they went to the senator's office in the afternoon, they are still having to educate people about what sexual orientation means, what gender identity means. So that's very effective, though, as well, because they hear it from people that live it and understand it. And we also saw, for example, it really helps us as an organization when people have that interaction and let us know. For example, Wayne Christian, who is from the Jasper area, as vice chair of the Criminal Jurisprudence Committee, the lobby teams met with his chief of staff, and twice we heard back from his chief of staff saying that they would vote the hate crime study bill out of committee. And so that allows us to then follow up to make sure, okay, this is what we heard you say, this is what you told your constituents, we want you to commit to doing this.
Well, that's wonderful. That's good to hear. Now, what other legislation that came up? I already know the answer, but I wanted the audience to hear what other legislation that you're pushing. Do you feel might have an opportunity to at least get a hearing this time?
Well, it's great. We already had a hearing on the hate crime study bill, which was probably the earliest we've gotten a hearing in a long time in a session. which is great news, and we were early in the day. We're also looking to get a hearing before the Public Education Committee of the Anti-Bullying and Harassment Bill. I would expect we probably would get a hearing on the Insurance Non-Discrimination Bill. We got a hearing last session.
Right.
I can't guarantee that. I think, Jennifer, you may have testified on that.
Yes, one. About 1:30 in the morning. Hopefully it'll be a little earlier this time.
And that's success. That's truly, it is. we're hoping to kind of move forward. And some great news that we heard over the weekend is that Dan Graney, who is president or chair of the Texas Stonewall Democratic Caucus, was appointed by Boyd Ritchie to serve on the legislative committee for the Texas Democratic Party. And two of our bills, the hate crime study bill and the anti-bullying harassment bill, were adopted as the top 15 pieces of legislation by the Texas Democratic Party.
Oh, good. So that's good support.
Incredible. Yeah, that's excellent support. It's the first time in a while where we've had, you know, our pro legislation adopted by the Texas Democratic Party that we're pushing forward and that they've recognized it. And, we have to give kudos out to Dan Graney for doing that as well as a member of that committee. So this goes back to like the work that you're doing, Jennifer, and that Dan's doing and people are doing across the state. We can't do it all, and we rely upon people really to become educated, know what the bills are and what the issues are, and be able to kind of let us know when they hear something, so that we can kind of short-circuit the process and be able to move this legislation forward.
Are there any other than the insurance bill, do you anticipate anything else getting a hearing?
Well, we're definitely going to be working in the same committee to get a hearing on the UT insurance bill, because it's in the same committee. So we definitely would like to get that one, as well as Michael Villarreal out of San Antonio, his bill on workplace non-discrimination, so the Texas version of INDA. Also, Jessica Farrar has filed a public accommodation non-discrimination bill. We would love to see her bill as a champion of ours, for Representative Farrar to get a hearing on that bill, because we feel like that one's really important as well. It's a strong bill, and she's a strong supporter, and we would like to really put some support behind that from our members across the state.
Yeah.
And also, we're looking forward to Representative Coleman filing several pieces of legislation this week in regards to the the Dignity for All Students Act, as well as the gender marker bill as well.
Well, Paul, we want to thank you for this. Paul Scott, Director of Equality Texas. We've been speaking to him about the success of Lobby Day this last Monday, March 2nd, as well as some prospects for the upcoming legislative session. Paul, give us your email address again so that people can contact you.
Yes, go online. First of all, you can sign up at www.equalitytexas.org, equalitytexas.org. And if you need to email us, please email us at info@equalitytexas.org. And I just want to say I am so proud and happy and privileged to be supported by the people in Houston. We had such great support on Lobby Day, and we continue to have that support. Y'all are just great, and we couldn't do it without y'all.
Well, Paul, thank you for all the work you do on the state level. I know without you, we would be kind of lost over here in Houston.
Well, y'all aren't very lost usually. Y'all know what y'all are doing, too, so thank y'all.
Thank you, Paul.
Take care.
This is Queer Voices.
Started as a whisper, I swelled into a chorus of millions crying for change. This time will be different, cause we can't make it different. And there's no way I'm gonna sit around and wait. No, not any longer.
Not any longer.
Not any longer. Can we just stand together?
Together.
It'll only make us stronger. Yeah,
we are the ones we've been waiting for. You say you won't change, I say yes we can. Let's
crying for change. Tell them yes, we can. Oh, 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 oh. Yes, we can. Chorus of millions crying for change. And this time will be different, 'cause we can make it different. And there's no way I'm gonna sit around and wait. No, not any longer.
Not any longer.
Not any longer.
Not any longer.
Stand together. It can only make us stronger.
Only make us stronger.
We are the ones we've been waiting for. You say you want change. I say yes, we can. Let there be healing from shore to shore. Hear them crying for change. Tell them yes, we can.
The Obama campaign of 2008. That was an MP3 single by Levi Kreiss and Debbie Holiday. The title, Yes We Can. Coming up next on Queer Voices, Jeremy Lane of Blind Friends, Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgendered People. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Well, you have heard of a PFLAG. It's a pretty common organization. But in Houston, and from what I understand, we are one of the few cities that have a separate organization, BFLAG. And tonight we have Jeremy Lane, who's the president of BFLAG, to talk about the organization and a fundraiser coming up. Jeremy, welcome. How are you?
Great, great. I'm glad to be back.
What is BFLAG?
The acronym is Blind Friends, Lesbians, and Gays. And really, it's a group that mainly has low vision and blind members. The difference between BFLAG and PFLAG is that the parents and friends of lesbians and gays is more of a hetero-based group in support of their gay friends and family members. However, BFLAG is more for and by the gay community. However, any orientation is welcome. However, the low vision part of it, it covers a whole broader spectrum. There is, of course, totally blind, but low vision is kind of many shades of gray, kind of like the variations of the GLBT community in many ways. People seem to understand the difference between deaf and hard of hearing, but they don't always grasp the concept of low vision and blind. I myself am legally blind. It's genetic. I do have reasonable vision, but I cannot drive. I do use a cane, and in my particular case, which often confuses people, I wear sunglasses. That's due to, in my case, light sensitivity. However, I on the average look like the average, what most people consider the average blind guy.
The stereotype.
The stereotype. Yeah. Right, right.
Now, tell us about members and how people find out about your organization.
Now, that actually is tricky. A lot of the low vision blind community does not really go out to a lot of the normal gay venues. For them, they're very sensitive towards hearing and light. I'm one of those when it comes to light, but I still try to go out and be seen. Sometimes, even if people don't come up and talk to me, just being out is awareness in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm one of the few. I try to inspire my members to come out more, but at the moment now, it's on. There's a various list of gay blind serves. Listservs, different message boards, digest electronically has helped a lot in the last few years, but there's still a lot that are very isolated, and that's the people we're trying to find. That, for example, those in schools for the blind often with I guess you could say it's the don't ask, don't tell policy, and there a lot of them are uncomfortable with being out of the closet based on their environment that they live in, their roommates or family. So many of them are closeted, and the 1 week they get to be out of the closet is when they can go to a Council for the Blind convention that is in the summers, where we have a BFLY convention simultaneously. And that sometimes for some people is the 1 week out of the entire year they get to be out of the closet. So we're trying to get ourselves known by radio, by ads, word of mouth.
This is the perfect medium, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
So it sounds very isolating. And you mentioned this convention. Where is that usually held and when?
It travels around from year to year. This year it will be in Orlando.
Uh-huh.
It's, I want to say for the most part, it's always around the week before or after July 4th.
Okay.
Always revolves around the July 4th area.
Okay.
And they have it from place to place. This year we're looking forward to Orlando, though.
I can imagine. Now, what about other community events like Pride? Does your organization participate in that?
Last year was our first official year. The year before, a PFLAG allowed me to march with them. I was wearing a PFLAG shirt, but I turned my identification cane into a lit-up sign that had BFLAG on it. As part of the condition, I got to march having the BFLAG sign so long as I was wearing a PFLAG shirt, and they were kind enough to let me do that. And I was army of one amongst the PFLAG group. Last year was our first official year where we actually were our own entity in the Pride Parade, and we're looking forward to doing it again this year, hopefully closer up in front of the parade. Last year we barely got in time, but we managed to make it.
And that's all about the application process and getting in.
Right.
Now, this year we have more people, like maybe a bigger contingency, or what are the plans for this year?
This year, we'd like to try to keep it relatively simple. It'll be just marchers and probably a nice spruced up vehicle with some decorations and things. In this particular case, normally it would actually be against the law to use an identification cane if you're not legally blind or completely blind. But in the parade, our shirts are often reds and whites to help educate. So in the parade, they're not official canes, but a lot of people who are not totally blind have them. They're actually well lit up to kind of reflect from the light and really just to promote education. So that's the one time people get away with it, but that's the only time they can.
I understand. And I hear that you have a fundraiser coming up.
Yes. March 12th, Thursday, from 6:30 to 9 at Meteor, which is on 2306 Genesee.
That's right.
They're doing the unveiling of the new cover art for the Rainbow Pages.
Mm-hmm.
I did the artwork last year as well as this year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. And I didn't know that.
Yeah, I have a lot of people ask how I do artwork. I tell them very closely and carefully. I'm about 2 inches from the paper.
You should say very well. Have you seen the artwork?
Well.
So this is the launch party where it's the cover is being unveiled.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand there's a new logo as well.
Well, not so much for Rainbow Pages, but for BFLAG,
okay.
The national as well as the local. It's to describe it, it's actually in the shape of an eye, and the iris is in divided up between the pride colors.
Mm-hmm.
For Texas, inside the pupil is a small star, like the Lone Star State, and there with the national, it's a globe. As they now have affiliates, us being the first. They thought it would be a good idea to start looking, you know, at having the whole planet there. Maybe we'll grow into those shoes one day.
Absolutely. Now, at this fundraiser, what can people expect?
Well, we have a silent auction with a wide variety of items, some of it artwork by myself as well as Todd Partridge and some other community artists. We have a stay at the Lovett Inn bed and breakfast at the silent auction, handful of gift cards and just some miscellaneous items. There's also going to be a raffle, and we'll have an info booth kind of educating about blind awareness, really, and with some B-Flag souvenir shirts and things like that, and a handful of volunteers floating around. Hopefully some of our members can get there. Transportation is an issue with all of us of the low vision community.
Absolutely.
Does Metro help out with that? How difficult? I mean, just to find out, because those of us who may be sighted, we don't understand the difficulties you might have.
They have MetroLift, which is a good service. They also, it's called something to the along the lines of a Metro card, MetroLift card, and it also provides a discounted rate for taxi service as well. A MetroLift is a kind of a smaller bus that you actually call in advance and make an appointment, and then they come and show up and pick you up the next day and take you where you need to go. Those are the main two services.
Do they assist you on and off the bus?
They can. It depends on your circumstance. It's not just totally for those who are visually impaired. It's for all types of disabilities. So it really, you make those requests when you go, and a lot of times when you apply, the doctor will, you know, write whatever's necessary or needed for you.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, for our listeners out there that may be interested, is there a website they can go to, or some where they can get more information?
Sure. Our new website, we've had an upgrade in our website as well as the new logo for the National, and it's bflagnational.org, all one word. There's also bflagtexas.org and bflaghouston.org.
Wow.
Our two local websites are actually under reconstruction right now. We're trying to step up to the plate of National. They've done a lot of new revamps and new looks, the logo, the website, and everything. And that's the best place to find information about our convention, what we're involved in, our interests. We're even hoping to put up a courtesy rules for the blind. A lot of people have a lot of questions or don't always know how to treat or deal with low vision or blind people when they come across them.
Nationally speaking, are there any statistics concerning how many GLBT visually impaired there are?
We have tried to number crunch on that. It's simply too hard to say. We know there are more out there than we're aware of, and there's several unaccountable variables. But in the Metro Houston area alone, we can only really guesstimate. But anywhere between 350 and 650 individuals that are legally blind, and that's not totally blind. Statistically, of that, people who are legally blind, it's one out of every four, I believe, is actually a totally blind individual.
Hmm. Wow. Didn't realize that.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions that people may have, or some of the things that you hear about low vision and blind people?
What's most often is enhanced hearing and superhuman-like abilities. That's
not true.
Well, some of the dates I have had, but that's, you know. No, but
I remember seeing Daredevil.
Actually, oddly enough, there's a fraction of truth to oddly enough Daredevil, the way they portray some things. But it was all movie, you know, hype. So a lot of it is definitely beefed up. But we do tend to just use our senses more so than everyone else. But they're really the same as everyone, which just our five senses are now divided into the remaining four.
Right.
And then there's other things like memory and things like that. We tend to have a better placement memory of items and things and. Mm-hmm. You know, little things like that, but the hearing and the sense of smell and stuff like that is a little bit more acute, it seems. Have a bizarre sense for when we're being watched, oddly enough, even totally blind people, which everyone seems to have, but it's unusual that they're actually studying that. Why do blind people have that sense, you know, of if somebody's staring at you from across the room?
That's interesting, yeah.
It's unusual. Unusual, yeah, yes.
That kind of feeling, that sense.
Sensing their energy nearby.
Yes, exactly. Now, if we have listeners out there that are, you know, in the quote-unquote closet, what's the best way to get a hold of someone like yourself, a leader in the community?
The best way is, if it's possible, is to email, and I do have a direct email address. All of our records, even with our members, are confidential. Even with the American Council for the Blind, they don't sell lists to anyone. Everything is confidential. Now, there is a certain amount of information that is turned into the American Council for the Blind for their own tax purposes, but that is it. And after being a member with them for many years, I can attest to that I've never received anything more than a couple of different newsletters, one from BFLAG and one from the Council for the Blind, and you can choose to not have them sent to you at all. The email address to contact myself directly is bflaghouston@yahoo.com. I answer that one personally, and our phone number is 832-433-1387. Our mailing address is 1302 Wall Drive, PMB number 478, Houston, Texas 77019. And those would be the primary mediums to get through to us. We're listed in the Rainbow Pages in the back in the resources area where a lot of nonprofits are. And those would be the best ways.
What sort of resources does the organization provide? I mean, how does it help out?
Well, we're still a York organization. We do have plans that we wish to pursue. Some things right now are political. For example, discrimination by default is really, I guess, a way of putting it, but people who are legally blind or blind don't have the right to own a vehicle in the state of Texas because you have to have a valid driver's license to get anything to do with a car, and that includes, you know, title and everything. So, you know, I would like to own a vehicle. I cannot drive it, but instead of bumming a ride for my friend, I can bum my friend for my ride. Uh-huh. You know, I can get him or her to drive me to the store or whatever, and I think that, you know, people should have the right to still own vehicles and things like that. The other is just trying to politically and more locally is, you know, pushing for more audible lights and more accessibility throughout the city and finding ways of hopefully keeping the taxpayer costs down, you know, such as Adopt a Street programs, similar philosophy, but you attach it to an audible sign or a vibrating sign, because some people that live near audible schools with the loud noises have gotten bothered, so now they make signs that crosswalk signs that vibrate, the buttons vibrate to indicate whether it's safe to go or not. So,
interesting. I hadn't heard about that. That's very interesting. And you know, I could see how that would be very beneficial to so many people, not just your direct community on that.
Well, the number one cause of loss of vision is age. So, you know, that's number one above everything else. And so people getting on in years, it you know, these are good things to have around in either case. You don't have to be totally blind. And as I said, there's many variations of vision impairment. So you might still be, you know, capable in some areas but not in others.
Very much so. And the part about not being able to own a car, because you wouldn't be able to own a car even if you had a driver. You know, hired a driver, something like that.
Right. And what they'll tell you a
not
lot of
legally,
times,
anyway.
Well, right. I mean, I remember in my mother's case, you know, we had one of those, like, driving Miss Daisy type things. So, because she couldn't drive any longer, and we had someone, but she owned the car.
Right.
I'd like to know how you do computers.
Ah, computers. The way they've come with technology in the last 20 to 30 years is fantastic. That is really given a lot of low vision blind people significant abilities to work. To be a part of the job force and to communicate. That's how many of them communicate, since a lot of them are rather isolated. They have a wide variety. They have a program called JAWS that is more meant for totally blind people, that literally tells you whatever's on the screen. It reads it to you. I've played with it. It's actually kind of fun. You can change the voices and have voices for different things. They've got settings for, like, grandmother voice, you know, butch voice, and all kinds of stuff, and it's kind of fun. But that's more meant for the totally blind. And the difference of the voices is for the different programs that you may have on your computer.
Right.
As far as someone such as myself that's low vision, they have a program or programs like it called Magic, which are audible as well as they magnify the screen. Mm-hmm. In some cases, they can take the little cursor arrow and make it as literally as large as the screen itself. Mm-hmm. So it's one heck of a magnification program.
Well, if you're out there and you like what you're hearing and you want to support this wonderful organization, there is a fundraiser coming up this Thursday, March 12th, 6:30 to 9 at Meteor at 2306 Genesee. Silent auction, lots of information, a raffle. You can see Jeremy's new design for the Rainbow Pages. Good job. Jeremy, anything else you want our listeners to hear or know about?
Just if there's anyone out there that knows of anyone that's low vision, or anyone that is, please get in contact with us. And if you're in a closeted situation, there can be arrangements made. We are trying to, we are approaching our 50th member, so we are trying to start putting more social events together, and the means for which to transport you there. So, and quietly if necessary, you know, confidentially if necessary.
Give us the email address again real quickly, so before we close.
Directly to me is bflaghouston@yahoo.com. That's all one word.
And if they want some more information about the organization here locally, go to
bflaghouston.org, bflagtexas.org, and or bflagnational.org.
Oh, thank you, Jeremy.
Jeremy, thank you, President of BFLAG. Check out the website and join us on Thursday at Meteor for the fundraiser.
All right, thank you very much. Voices. Thank you.
Love has a name, it's really hard to say. And if you try to say it, it might take you all day. But you know what they say about a guy with a really long name. Now if you had one of those, you'll never be the same. Dicky dicky dimbo, no sorry, mo, cherry berry, do what you did, daddy dimbo. Dicky dicky dimbo, no sorry, mo, cherry berry, do what you did, daddy dimbo. Dicky dicky dimbo, no sorry, mo, cherry berry, do what you did, daddy dimbo. Dicky dicky dimbo, no sorry, mo, cherry berry, do what you did, daddy dimbo. My lover is a foreigner, so he tried to get a green card. But he told him it would take 20 years, cause his name is just too hard. He's got this little brother, and his brother's name is Joe. And Joe got a green card in just 1 week after he married some little hoe. Oh! Tiki tiki dimbo, no sorry, mo, cherry berry, do what you did, daddy dimbo. Tiki tiki dimbo, no sorry, mo, cherry berry, do what you did, daddy dimbo. Tiki tiki dimbo, no sorry, mo, cherry berry, do what you did, daddy dimbo. Tiki tiki dimbo, no sorry, mo, cherry berry, do what you did, daddy dimbo. So my lover is illegal, I think that's kind of hot. Makes it more exciting whenever we get caught. And when they try to deport him, his case always gets dismissed. Because it takes so long to say his name, the judge just gets pissed. Tiki tiki dumbo, tiki tiki dumbo, tiki tiki dumbo, cherry berry root chicken. Tiki tiki dumbo, tiki tiki dumbo, tiki tiki dumbo, cherry berry root chicken. Tiki tiki dumbo, dumbo, cherry berry root chicken, berry dumbo. Tried to marry my lover and get him his green card, but some stupid politician said our marriage would be barred. So we are moving to Canada where they don't care about your name. No matter who you love, they treat you just the same. Tiki tiki dumbo, tiki tiki dumbo, tiki tiki dumbo, cherry berry roochie. Tiki tiki dumbo, tiki tiki dumbo, tiki tiki dumbo. Oh,
Okay, that was different. That was a song called Tiki Tiki Tembo by Jeffrey Berenger from the CD Raise Hell, Raise Babies, which was actually never released, I guess, as a private CD from 2003. This is Queer Voices.
Cool. I put this on.
Well, we're back, and coming up...
Do you like that pregnant pause?
That was. This is kind of the season...
So the sound of everybody clacking their headphones on, that was one pure radio.
That was pure radio. Well, we don't have any listeners at this point. This is the
That's
season
what happens
of fun-
when we're running behind a little bit.
A little bit. This is the season of fundraisers, and there's many, many fundraisers coming up.
Yes.
But there's one especially appropriate for this time of year.
What is that?
It's called Bringing in the Green. And why is that appropriate, Jennifer?
I don't know. What is Bringing in the Green? Oh, St. Patrick's Day.
Exactly.
Oh, isn't this an event with... Where? Listen, Montrose Counseling Center?
Montrose Counseling. It's a long-standing event.
Yeah.
And we have
20 years, I think.
We have the beautiful Malia Jones coming in from
Thank
the Montrose
you.
Counseling Center. And what is your role at the Montrose Counseling Center?
I'm a community project specialist, so I'm on the development team, and I do donor cultivation and events.
So you're just the all-around money-raising diva, it
yes,
sounds like.
Yes, exactly.
So for people that have no clue what this event is about, tell us a little bit about what they can expect. What is this? How did this start? I mean, tell us about the event.
Yeah, the event has been a long-time favorite for St. Patrick's Day as a celebration. This is its 20th anniversary, as you mentioned. And really, it's just a fun cocktail party. It's at the home of our host, John Danielson, and his generous underwriting means that all of the proceeds from the event go directly towards client services. And it's just a great party at a beautiful home with a great backyard, and there's delicious hors d'oeuvres provided by Dwayne Todd Attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And so people just come in and hang out and grab a drink and go in the backyard and just mingle and enjoy themselves. It's going to be this Friday on March 13th from 5:30 to 8:30 at 3618 Burlington Street.
Good, and I guess your donation is at the door, whichever.
Uh-huh, you can pay at the door, or you can pay through our website, montrosecounselingcenter.org.
Is there any specific place we should look when we go to that website?
You'll see a big old button right on the top right that says Donate Now, and you can donate there, and then just designate Bring It in the Green, or you can put March 13th with your online donation.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Now, do you have, like, green beer and green drinks?
We don't have green beer or green drinks. We do have an open bar, so you're able to, you know, get whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the greenery will be from the decorations, and, of course, we encourage everybody to dress up for the event.
So green food?
Actually, the food is more delicious than than going with the theme.
Oh,
so
okay.
We don't limit it to only green food.
Now, tell us a little bit about where the money would go from this event.
It all is going to go towards client services. It's not designated to one particular program, but we have a lot of great programs. We have lots of different types of counseling. We have couples counseling, general counseling for people who might be suffering from depression or having coming out issues. We also have counseling that's specifically directed towards people who are living with HIV and their loved ones. We also have chemical dependency counseling. We have also counseling for survivors of domestic abuse or sexual assault, hate crimes. We also have an HIV case management program. We have seniors program. We have a youth program.
Is that
program.
The SPRI program?
Yes.
Okay.
SPRI is our seniors program, and we have HATCH, which is our youth program.
Which doesn't stand for anything these days.
That is true.
And it used to stand for something, but
yes.
Now it's
what,
just,
HATCH?
Yes. What now it's just HATCH.
It's just HATCH?
Yes.
Okay.
The acronym used to just say homosexuals in it, and then to be all-inclusive of everyone, the youth actually brought it up and wanted to change the name so that it's no longer an acronym.
Oh, good.
But we're hatching these adolescents into.
Because I never could figure out what it was, you know?
It's like a youth group that's kind of grown, but that it still has kind of that brand name with it, with the hatch.
It hatched?
It hatched. Oh, very good.
God.
Oh, my God. This is wonderful radio, man.
Yeah, especially when we weren't paying attention. So, now, with all these different programs that you have there, I guess y'all are always having to raise money, aren't you?
Yes.
We have a, our budget has really grown. When we first started, it was like $350,000, and now it's $3.8 million. So, and, you know, so of course that comes for a big part of it. We have to fundraise.
Are you running into difficulty in this time because of the economy? We've heard from other 501c3s that they have trouble. Are having positive. Have you seen any of that yet, as far
not
as you're
yet.
Concerned?
We're sort of bracing for it, and we're trying to prepare in case it comes. But we've been very lucky so far, and we have very loyal supporters, and they've been very generous. And so we're sort of anticipating that that might happen, but we feel very blessed that it hasn't happened yet.
Good. Yeah. Murphy's Law. Prepare for the worst, but expect the best.
Exactly.
All right, good.
And what I really like about the Montrose Counseling Center is the rainbow of services, to use a pun, no pun intended, I guess, that you provide the community. And it's been called Houston's best-kept secret, our communities.
Yes.
And so I know that Sally Huffer has been endeavored to spread the word about the Montrose Counseling Center, and you've become involved. So
yes.
It's a great cause, and I encourage people to go visit the center. What's the address for the center?
Yes, we're at 401 Bernard. And speaking of coming and seeing us, we actually have some tours coming up if anyone wants to come and tour the center and sort of find out more information.
When is this going to be?
We have one on April 2nd and another one on April 22nd, so easy to remember, both at 6:30. And if anyone's interested in that, they can contact me. My email address is communitydev, as in development, but just those first three letters, communitydev@montrosecounselingcenter.org.
It's community diva at Montrose.
I was going to say, all she needs is an A in the community diva.
Right, right.
But it's not. Community D-E-V.
D-E-V. And it's if the community knows, it's the old fitness exchange building.
Yes.
It's been renovated, completely renovated and fabulous on the inside.
Yeah, we're very excited now. We have the first floor. We have a lot of space. And so we have both leasable space and also rentable space. And so people, for other local GLBT nonprofit groups, they're really making use of it. They're coming and having meetings there. We still have, we're getting more and more tenants. And so we are proud that we are one of our tenants is GCAM, the Gulf Coast mm-hmm. Archive and Museum. Mm-hmm. And also PFLAG is also housed on our first floor. And so if anyone is looking for a meeting space, we have small spaces as well as a big community room where that's where we hold our Hatch Prom, which is coming up in July.
Oh.
Yeah. I believe it's June 12th.
I'm sure it's on the website.
It is.
Check out the website.
Coming up in July on June 12th.
If you want to go to the prom, look it up.
Yes.
Go to the website. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm noticing that there are a lot more meetings that are being held there, so it's kind of it's being utilized as kind of the community space.
Yeah.
And it's super convenient. I mean, it's in kind of in our area, quote unquote our area.
Exactly.
Great parking and, you know, pretty widely known.
Yeah, we tried our best to make very reasonable prices, and the feedback that we've heard is very positive about that, so.
Especially inside the loop, kind of, that's premium real estate, so to have a leasable space that's reasonable is a great asset to our community. Mm-hmm.
Now, how did this event start? You're saying it's the 20th anniversary, or the 20th event. How did it start? Do you have any idea?
Being a newbie on the team, I don't know exactly, but I do know that some of our board members in the past really put this party together. And that's really all I know about it. But I have attended the last two, and they're a blast. So even for people who have not been before, anyone and everyone is welcome.
They just need someplace safe to go on St. Patty's Day.
Yeah, just an excuse for everyone to come together and have fun.
How many people usually come? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, generally there's about 200 people.
Okay.
Not necessarily all in the same room at the same time, but people coming in and going out.
Is there anything special they need to know before they come?
No, just come, prepare, have fun, maybe wear some green, and just prepare for some great food and good people.
Now, are there any other events coming up after this one?
Besides the tours on April 2nd
right.
and the 22nd, and the prom, which I believe is going to be June 12th, no other upcoming events that are pressing. Yeah.
What about major fundraising events? What kind of things do y'all do throughout the year?
We do the prom, that's our big one, and mm-hmm. then every November we have what we call the secrets out, because we want to get the secret out about our great program.
Yeah. Yes. And unfortunately, this last year, the hurricane kind of put a kibosh on that, and you had to reschedule, but it was a wonderful event. I mean, very widely attended. I think every table that I saw was completely filled, and I'm sure a lot of money was raised, and it was a great time, and a tremendous video presentation that, you know, I recognize the work that went into that, so...
Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah, we had a blast, and we really appreciated everyone coming out and supporting us by attending.
Is there anything that we've missed that you wanted to talk about? Other than, aside from the event coming up this Friday?
I don't think so. I think we've covered it, unless you guys have any other questions.
How did you get involved with the Montrose Counseling Center?
I used to be a teacher, and when I left teaching, I wanted to do something. I knew I wanted to work for a nonprofit, and I looked particularly at nonprofits that serve the GLBT communities. And so I felt very lucky to get on board with Montrose Counseling Center.
Absolutely.
I think they do great work, and I'm glad to be a part of it and be able to help.
Did you tell us when you joined them?
2.5 years ago.
2.5 years.
Yeah.
Why haven't you been on our show before? Sally finally let you come, huh?
Well, I was working, doing some administrative work, and now that I'm on the development team, now you might be seeing
you
got to
be the face and the voice.
Yes, yes.
And then with Sally, I mean, she's gradually slipping and vanishing and disappearing away, you know?
Oh, yes.
The ever vanishing.
The ever vanishing Sally Effort.
Beautiful woman.
I haven't seen her. I was looking forward to seeing her tonight.
I was looking forward to her being, not that we didn't want you here, but we're looking forward to see how it's coming. For those of you who don't know, she's
come on Friday. You can see her.
Yeah. Well, of course. Now, the only question now is finding a green sequined outfit for the, like a jacket or something.
I have one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, you might not want to wear mine. Well, never mind.
I have a new sweater. No sequins, but it's very bright Kelly green.
But it's so... what is it going to be, like 80-something?
Well, my sweater has short sleeves, but okay. I was a little worried about that. But it was so perfect.
You never know in Texas.
It's supposed to be cooling off by then. It's supposed to be high in the low 60s by then. So
that Friday.
So no. Don't worry. Yeah. We have a front coming in.
Absolutely.
Count on the weather.
Let's recap our event coming up.
Yeah, this Friday, right?
Yes, this Friday from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the home of John Danielson at 3618 Burlington Street.
I'm sure that's a fantastic house. I've never been.
It's beautiful.
There's
going
to be 200 people there. It better be big.
I know.
It's beautiful. It's beautifully decorated. There's some great paintings inside. Plus, he has a nice big backyard. And so it's a great, great space. And it's very kind of him to let us use it. We're also going to have wonderful hors d'oeuvres, courtesy of Dwayne Todd Attorney. There's going to be a silent auction of just a few luxury items. Mm-hmm. We have some Southwest Airline tickets, some Houston Grand Opera tickets, some beautiful decorative chairs. And so we hope everyone will come out and maybe get themselves a great deal on something.
Is there any way to find out about those silent auction items prior to appearing there on Friday?
You can shoot me an email. But besides that, just show up
and that email address again was?
communitydev@montrosecounselingcenter.org.
And people can get tickets on the website or at the door?
Either.
Okay,
both.
Either. Well, hopefully before. Get them on the website before they sell out.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's a capacity.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever reached it yet, but maybe this will be the year.
Well, maybe this will be the year.
Possibly, let's create that possibility.
Yeah.
Okay, Malia, let's recap. Is there a phone number that they can call?
Sure, 713-529-0037.
And the website?
MontroseCounselingCenter.org.
Doing a great job, and we want you listeners to come out Friday and bring in the green. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
A Rainbow Minute celebrates Rock's messenger, and 11 Minutes explores a fashionista's real-life runway world. Later in the program. It wouldn't take much for Turkey to top its regional neighbors when it comes to acceptance of gays and lesbians. Although the country is predominantly Muslim, it's a secular republic where homosexuality is not officially illegal. Still, harassment by the public and the police occurs on a regular basis. The offices of Lambda Istanbul, the country's leading LGBT advocacy group, were raided last year, and a local court agreed with authorities that the organization should be shut down for violating morality and family values. That ruling was overturned by Turkey's Supreme Court of Appeal, but activists remain concerned about its legal ramification. So what's it like to come out as gay there? Radio Netherlands human rights reporter Jonathan Gruber asked a young man named Emrecan.
I was quite young. I guess I was 11 or 12 when I realized that I'm gay, but personally, I was perfectly fine with it, and so were my friends. It wasn't much of a big deal. It was just more like dinner conversation.
Well, it's good that your friends were so accepting. How about your family?
My family hasn't been very accepting, though. That's pretty much the only trouble I had when I came out.
Well, what was their reaction?
My dad was rather old and of ill health, so I didn't tell him. I first told my mom, and she wasn't happy about it.
What did she say?
She said that she somehow guessed it, but didn't think it would be true up until I confronted her about it. It was pretty much what you hear about other parents. She wasn't happy about it. She thought we could and should change it.
Well, how does Turkish society view gays?
There is no one monolithic outlook of the Turkish society towards LGBT people, but I think we can safely say that it's a rather homophobic culture. But of course this differs from one place to another. For instance, in a place like Istanbul, it's much different than how it would be in, for instance, the eastern cities or the villages.
And I will assume that the difference is that Istanbul has more of an accepting atmosphere.
Yes, that's true. Istanbul is a very crowded city, so not many people have a lot of time to actually look around and notice the gays long enough to hate them. It's pretty much like you can go under the radar and be easily safe.
Can you be overtly homosexual?
It is certainly possible. Being effeminate or overtly gay or public displays of affection, they happen. But it's, I guess, pretty much like anywhere else in that you kind of have to be discreet, maybe from time to time, depending on the situation or which street where you're going up, what time it is of the day.
Do you change your behavior when you leave Istanbul?
I do not change my personal behavior, but life changes when you leave Istanbul because it's not like anywhere else. For instance, when I go up to Ankara, I probably am not that overtly gay in the streets because, you know, there's no gay life in Ankara for me to be overt about.
Now, I understand that you were recently attacked when you were out with your boyfriend. Can you tell me what happened?
We left a club. It was around 4 a.m. in the morning, I suppose, and we walked from the Taksim Square to my boyfriend's place, and apparently two guys actually followed us on the way here, and they saw us kissing, which is obviously why they followed, and when we were trying to get inside, they just threw a beer bottle at us and started yelling all sorts of homophobic slurs. There was no physical violence because two policemen came and somehow rescued us.
Were you injured?
No, I wasn't. Neither was my friend.
How does that make you feel?
It brings back quite a few nasty memories because this has happened before. And, you know, I've had to deal with a lot of fear and panic attacks. And this is the first time that something like this has happened to me in Istanbul, where I felt relatively safe, especially around these neighborhoods. You know, it wasn't something I expected, but it's not a big shock either.
Emrecan, Turkey is trying to move closer to the EU. It's trying to become a member state. But at the same time, there's also this rise in fundamentalism in the country. What do you think this means for Turkish gays like yourself?
I'm not so sure that it's in the rise. While the extremists are always a bit of a hassle, whatever religion it is, not just Muslims, but Christian fundamentalists are a pain in the neck as well. But I personally do not feel that I'm somehow unsafe because of the rising Islamist government of Turkey.
Do you think other gays in the country feel the same as you?
I think it would be too simplistic for anyone to say that I'm gay and I'm scared of this Muslim government. It's not just that. There's much more to this issue than that simplistic connection.
Well, Emrecan, thank you very much for telling us your story, and thank you for coming on to our show.
Thank you.
Teşekkür ederim.
Vantage agreement.
Jonathan Gruber interviewed Emrecan in Istanbul for Radio Netherlands.
Hello, I'm designer Jay McCarroll. Listen to This Way Out, the international weekly radio show for all our sexually diverse communities, because hate is never in fashion.
He did rock you. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Freddie Mercury, lead singer for the English rock band Queen, was born in 1946 on the African island of Zanzibar. At age 17, his family moved to England. He earned a diploma in graphic design and changed his surname to Mercury after the messenger god. In 1970, he helped form Queen and established his flamboyant, gender-bending stage persona. He wrote the hits Bohemian Rhapsody and We Are the Champions, which became long-lived favorites worldwide. In November of 1991, he publicly confirmed that he was suffering from AIDS. He died the next day with Jim Hutton, his partner of 6 years, at his side. As tragic as it was, Freddie's death increased public awareness of AIDS. A fellow rocker, Dave Mustaine, said, "I really love Freddie Mercury, the way he just truly went with his voice." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Tiny Stevens.
An ongoing legal battle between Lifetime, Bravo, and the Weinstein Company has delayed the sixth season premiere of U.S. TV's Project Runway. So if you're a devotee of gay reality catfights, you may be in for serious withdrawal. But This Way Out entertainment reporter Steve Pride says a new movie about the show's first winner might be just the interim fix you need.
It's been a while since the sharp-witted Jay McCarroll was dubbed the next great American designer. On season one of Project Runway, the new documentary, 11 Minutes, chronicles his year-long journey preparing his first independent runway show for New York's Fashion Week.
Fashion Week happens twice a year, once in February and once in September. It's February, and I'm showing in September.
So I guess today marks when I need to get in gear. I have a design. It's in my studio. It's on paper. I just don't know how to pay for it or how to get it produced, manufactured, distributed, advertised, merchandise. I just know how to put it on paper.
I've been trying for two seasons now to get this show on the road. I have a shelf life, so if I don't show this coming season, people are not going to care anymore. Of course, everyone is an authority. What's Jay doing with his life? Why isn't he working hard enough? Why isn't he working fast enough? Jay hasn't shown yet. Jay's an embarrassment. He hasn't done anything since Project Runway. It's very important for me to make that leap from reality TV designer to real life designer.
Hello, I'm designer Jay McCarroll.
Jay, when did you know you were gay?
I guess I've always known, obviously. I remember I was at a state park, and they had, like, a changing room. And I remember walking in, totally like a chubby, innocent weirdo. And I walked in, and I stood still because I was watching this guy shower. And I was like, oh, my God, I, like, think I'm interested in this thing. I remember, like, time going by so slowly. Thank you, Madonna, for that reference. And just staring at him and his male body and all that stuff. So probably, I guess, around eight years old, I really realized that. And then the family thing, yes, came out during high school. Yeah, it was very easy. Plus, I twirled batons growing up. I made my own clothes. I arranged flowers. I made wreaths for people out of flowers in the yard. Like, I was a fag, so there wasn't really much of a discussion. I didn't have to hide anything. I was who I was. And I was the youngest of six kids, so by that time, they had gone through every kind of personality flaw. So by me, I was just, hey.
But now you're a big-time reality star celebrity. How has that changed your social life?
I meet tons of guys, really hot guys too, and I cannot even believe they talk to me or touch me, but I know why they're doing it, because I had to live 30 years with them not knowing who I was and not caring who I was and only seeing me as a freak and a fatty and whatever, and they were cruel to me. And then it's funny because in 1 year I'd gone from nobody to everything. I was one of Out Magazine's, 100 gay people of 2005 or whatever. And I just thought that thing was hilarious because up until that point, I had people pouring drinks on me and calling me fat and weird. And I'd go out with my friend Keith, and literally people would look at me and say, or they would look at us and they'd look at him and say, so do you want to come back to our house? But don't bring him, and look right at me. And it was like, and now it's totally reversed. I psychologically, and it's probably not even true, think that they want to have sex with me so they could say they had sex with me and then talk about it on a blog.
How's the career going?
To some people, I'm sure they think I'm a failure because I'm not Marc Jacobs right now. And luckily, I'm able to have this kind of outlet to tell my real side of the story. You know, I'm still working, but I'm not taking that path. So, and I don't really live by other people's expectations so much. I have in the past, but I just want to live and do my work and be left alone. Leave me alone.
I mean, I could say Auf Wiedersehen.
You? Well, that's what I was thinking about Heidi Klum once. She commented on me not doing stuff fast enough. And I thought, you know what? I don't just show up to a photo shoot where every single person has done all the work. Someone's picked out the clothes. Someone has set up the makeup. Someone is doing the makeup. Someone is doing the hair. Someone has set up the camera, taking the picture. You show up. And you were born beautiful. How hard is that? Come on now. And you get paid the biggest paycheck out of it. Like, it's completely backwards, you know? The intern who had to go get lunch and set up the camera and set up the light and listen to the irate photographer be mean to him and organize this and organize that got paid nothing for that, for you to show up and be pretty. I hate that. I don't think that's fair.
I've got a show in 11 days. That tent's gonna be filled with a bunch of gays giving me orders. It's not really there. You can't force it.
No, that was good. You were on to something.
Hi!
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Nancy Kane.
Ready to drop some knowledge.
Oh my God.
It's good.
I'm so gay.
Scarlett Johansson's that imitation of Christ.
Why isn't she at Jay McCarroll?
I don't know.
Well, Nancy's been talking for the past 3 weeks about all these famous people. She goes through this list. Alec Baldwin, Scarlett Johansson.
It might be a situation where they just haven't confirmed yet.
She's like, I'm not going to even talk about it, but Lindsay Lohan is coming to your show. Who walks through the door? Paola Giangiacomo from my local newscast in Lehman, Pennsylvania. We couldn't get Lindsay Lohan, but we got this girl who's on this USA program that's coming out in December about aliens.
Oh, okay. Sounds good, Nancy.
But it still might come is what I'm trying to say.
And then today she's like, J.C. Chazé is the only one that's going to come to your show, and he won't come without a car. That's what Lee just told me. If Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen wanted to come, car service. Kate Pearson from the B-52s, car service. Blondie. My list of 20 people I gave to her that I wanted, that, oh, they're all in Japan that week. Or five people in this room that need to get paid before J.C. Chazé gets a car service. God.
What celebrities are coming to show?
Me.
And what does 11 Minutes director Michael Soldovich hope audiences take away from the film?
If people can really appreciate the process more of what goes into whatever artistic endeavor it may be, whether it's doing a fashion show or making a film or building a building or any of those things, it's one thing to see the finished product and to say, oh, that's beautiful. I like that. Or I like that shirt. Or, you know, I like that house or whatever it is. But to understand everything that went into getting to that place, which often takes a long, long time, in many cases years on some of these things, for films, for architecture, and for fashion even in some cases. To understand that process and really get it, I think is really what I would love to see people take from seeing this film. And a lot of people have told us that they have been intrigued and amazed and entertained by watching that process.
This has been a visit with director-producer Michael Soldovich and fab fashionista Jay McCarroll. 11 Minutes is a Regent Here release. For more info on this and other queer cinema, check out prideonscreen.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
All the homos wanna be beside you on the dance floor. You always know the latest moves. You groovy in that retro way. God, it must be hard work to be chic and so aloof and afraid to be different from the rest of us who only watch you. What's it like to be here? to be you.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Donna Ann Ward, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Jay McCarroll, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Tiny Stevens, Sherry Lund, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Jonathan Gruber with Eric Boschemann at Radio Netherlands. Paxton performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Trans FM, Broward County, Florida, Experiment FM, Ames, Iowa, Tasman FM, Nubina, Tasmania, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
Yeah, Brian. Hey, you know, it's interesting that for everybody, so y'all know for next week, we're going to have the all sports show. Something
gays
we don't normally.
Sports.
Gay sports.
Gay sports, yes.
I can't ever do that. I work so hard on my voice, so, you know. I don't want to
mess it up, yeah.
No, I don't want to mess it up. I don't. But it's going to be all sports, different sports within the gay community and their organizations will be on next week. So there'll be something if you've been interested in sports and just haven't found the right outlet, it'll be good to listen next week.
If you like sports or people who play sports, athletes themselves.
We won't go there.
We won't go there. But this was kind of our all fundraiser show, it seemed like.
We were raising funds for everybody but us.
We're raising awareness
concept.
For community organizations, which included...
Kelly McCann was here with the AIDS Foundation of Houston talking about this Sunday's AIDS Walk. It starts around 8 o'clock for registration, so if you want to be participant, get out there and sign up. Also, we had Paul Scott, director of Equality Texas. We were talking about the successful Lobby Day, March 2nd, last Monday, and also the benefits that he has seen in the legislation.
We had our friend Jeremy Lane, who is the president of BFLAG, talking about his event, or the organization's upcoming fundraiser at Meteor on Thursday, the 12th. And finally, we had the beautiful Malia Jones of the Montrose Counseling Center talking about their upcoming event, which is Friday, called Bringing in the Green. And they have information on their website.
And we want to thank all of you, and we'll see you next week.
This is Queer Voices, and thank you for tuning in.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Mark your calendar to come help KPFT celebrate our birthday with some of your favorite musicians on Sunday, March 15th, the Ides of March, starting at noon until 7 p.m. over at McGonagall's Mucky Duck, 2425 Norfolk, just off the intersection of Kirby, south of Richmond. Celebrate with performances by Poe Girl, Randy Weeks, Patrice Pike, Jesse Dayton, and Mike Stinson, Shake Russell, John Evans, Hamilton Loomis, Johnny Boy, and Milt Hopkins, Sugar Bayou, and others, including special guests. Your $20 admission ticket gets you into the big top 10 for all the celebratory festivities. So please join us and help celebrate KPFT on its 39th birthday, Sunday, March 15th, starting at noon at McGonagall's Mucky Duck, 2425 Norfolk Street in Houston. This is KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
KPFT is now accepting nominations for listener members to its program council. The KPFT Program Council is an advisory body founded to give broader community input in programming. The PC works with KPFT's management around a myriad of programming matters. KPFT is seeking 6 listener members to participate in the program council. Visit kpft.org to apply now and make plans to attend the Wednesday, March 18th local station board meeting to be held at the Haven Center, 1827 West Alabama, between Woodhead and South Shepherd in Houston. At kpft.org, you can find full information about the program council, what it does, and how it works. You can also submit your own nomination to the program council. And don't forget to attend the March 18th local station board meeting to be held at the Haven Center, 1827 West Alabama, and speak to the board, which votes on your nomination. KPFT encourages members of our diverse listening audience to get involved in...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.